So y'all probably know how much I love Jenny Nash's blueprint books. They really are the closest thing I've found to a guide for getting through draft after draft. I start with them, and I go back to them when I'm stuck. Her blueprints keep me on track and help me write the book I set out to write for the readers I hope to reach. For memoirists, I have fantastic news. Her newest blueprint, Blueprint for a Memoir, How to Write a Memoir for the Marketplace, is coming August 1st, 2023. So if you're listening to this in real time, there is a fantastic event available only to those who pre-order, a live or recorded if you want to wait, deep dive into the four key steps of memoir writing with a chance for Jenny Nash to select you for a live hot seat coaching session to review your work and an entry to win her grand prize, a written review of your blueprint and an exclusive 50-minute strategy session with Jenny. I think this blueprint is Jenny's best yet, with insights into storytelling that I'll be using in all of my work. So, find all the details for the book and the pre-order event at bookcoaches.com/podcast. And of course, as always, link in the show notes. Hey, I'm KJ Dell'Antonia, and this is the #AmWriting Podcast, the weekly podcast about writing all the things, short things, long things, pitches, proposals. This is the podcast about finding a way to get that work done. Today's episode is the third in our 2023 Summer Idea Factory series. Jenny Nash is back, and this time she and I are talking about the process of testing out an idea, talking through it, and spending enough time with it to figure out if it will sustain you through an entire book, and if you want it to. I hope you enjoy it. All right, so this is you, Jenny, will be the first person to hear any details of my four book ideas. So my goal for this month was to come up with four book ideas that were not the cat that just jumped. All right, so.
Well, before you say anything else, I just want to say thank you for letting me be in that position of trust to hear your fragile ideas. It is not something I ever take lightly with any writer because it is some hard stuff to put your ideas out in the world beyond your own head.
It is. So I'm going to be delicate about them in some ways because I don't want to break them. Sometimes when you talk about an idea before you are ready, you know, you can bust some of the details of it. But I've got these four nailed down. So that was my goal, was an idea a week. And they're all ideas that came from, in some way, that airport game plus the thing that interested me. So first I went into the airport game and some other places to pick, like what I was going to work on. And what's funny is that one of the things I thought I was going to work on was something that I had just sort of more recently come up with. And it hadn't been noodling around in my head for weeks and weeks and weeks. And that one didn't work. Like, I spent 3 days on it, and it wasn't interesting me enough. I couldn't quite figure out what it was. I kept having to play with it and change it. So all four of these ideas, their genesis is in the airport game, and it was in a game of the airport game that I played 6 months ago. Mm-hmm. And they also all have something in them that's been, like, in my head or in my, like, sort of idea well in some way, shape, or form for a pretty long time. So they've been stewing. That's what I'm trying to say.
So you had six ideas that emerged in the airport game and four made it to what we'll call fruition of some persuasion.
Three made it to this, and then a fourth one was something that I, yeah, no, one of them did not come from that. One of them came from other stuff that I've been thinking about for a while. So it just wasn't in the airport game. So three are from the airport game, and one of them just was other things really sort of forcing themselves into my consciousness. And the fun thing about this, so I want to talk about a couple things, but one fun thing about this is that every one of these ideas, during the week I was doing it, I was like, oh, this is it.
And I wanted to just stop. And if it hadn't sort of made the rule that I was going to make four and also promised a variety of people that there would be four, I would have probably stopped and winged it. And I don't want to do that because I've done that before. I've never really had the opportunity to be strategic about what book choice I write next. The Chicken Sisters I'd been working on for years. And, you know, it came from the genesis of an idea, and I reshaped it many, 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 many times. And then In Her Boots, I kind of grabbed the first thing and ran with it, in part because I was so determined to have something finished before Chicken Sisters came out.
Mm-hmm.
Because I did not want the fate of my next book to hang on the fate of the Chicken Sisters. And I also didn't want to be frozen by the fate of the Chicken Sisters. So I really just wanted to keep going.
You wanted momentum.
I wanted momentum, right. So this is my first time really sitting down and being like, okay, what do I want to do next? What would be the best thing to do next? Like what's strategically a good plan? And also, what do I want to do? So I'm having fun going about it that way.
Okay, so I keep hearing you use the word strategic. Can we talk about that word? What does that mean to you?
Well, first of all, I've done the Clifton Strengths, and that is my number one thing, is being strategic. But in this case, what it really means is, okay, so I've got three books. The Chicken Sisters was a hit, and it was a hit. Well, obviously it was a hit because Reese Witherspoon picked it, but why did Reese Witherspoon pick it? I don't know, but it's, you know, it's multi POVs. It's a small town story. It's got a lot of heart. It's definitely a feel good. I don't want to leave those things behind. In Her Boots, people love. It's not been the hit that the Chicken Sisters has been, but a lot of people say they like it even better. So, and it also has a lot of heart, small town, intricate family relationships, pretty complex. You know, it's a light story, but with a lot of depth to it, if I do say so myself. And a sweet farm setting, right. They've both got great settings. And then my witch book also has a great setting. And, you know, it's kind of all of those things plus witches.
I was going to say it's small town, it's intricate family, it has a lot of things that are similar, but a totally different genre and direction. Do you want to talk about why you made that move?
That was for me. I really wanted to do that. I love magical realism that leans all the way. Like, I've actually discovered I'm not that crazy about magical realism that never names itself.
Mm.
So this almost, I don't even know if you call this magical realism, except that it's set in the real, what I like is magic set in the real world. I think that's a better way to put it. I also like fantasy, but maybe someday, but right now that isn't what I wanted. What I wanted was a story of magic powers in the real world. And I wanted it to be like Hereditary and family and, you know, stuff you can't control. And I really wanted to explore. And the thing it does explore is this question of what you can and can't control in life. And witchcraft is a really fun way to do that because you can control tons of things, but you still can't control the things you want to control. Like say your child, or if you can, you don't really want to, you just think you want to. So I love this book. I hope it's going to do really well.
And so why at this moment? So when we are speaking, this book has not come out yet, and you don't know how it will be received. It's all a big question mark, but we know you want to have more momentum in your career and keep writing, keep doing the things, and you're being strategic. So why not? I just happen to know the witch card very well. There's so many great characters, so many great stories you could attach to that book, meaning there could be a prequel, there could be a sequel, there could be other character, there could be a series, there could be this, that. Why not put those on the list?
So that is a really good question, because so many of the books that I align playing the witch card next to, like the Lana Harper Thistle Witches of Thistle Grove series, Rachel Hawkins writing as Erin Sterling, she has a wonderful series. All again, it's a single witchy town with a lot of things that go on. There's a couple writers named Hazel. They've come together under the name Hazel Buck Beck. They, you know, last year they had one, the next one's clearly on its way. That's a thing. Like, to be like, here is my witchy series. Every Halloween you're gonna get a new witchy book. And A, nobody asked me to do that. So I don't know why. I don't know why they get to do that and I don't get to do that. But I didn't pitch that either. In part because I've occasionally seen instances of that where the first one doesn't take off and then either the second one just gets published and sits, sort of dies on the vine, but you're stuck writing it. Or maybe you don't sell this, or maybe people don't want to write the second one. I know, a lot of things can go wrong within that. So there's that. And so I didn't go into this saying this is a series. Although, yeah, I can see, you know, did I leave series potential in there? Absolutely. There's definitely different places that I could go. I think I want to see how it goes. I don't really want to go back in there unless readers are going with me, if that makes any sense.
So how do you, I want to just dig into that a little minute, because all the things we're talking about here, this whole series about how do you choose the idea? It's not where the idea comes from. It's how do you choose the idea? And you, there's a lot I hear both sides, all sides of, the thing I want to write, the thing that's in my heart, the thing that's pulling me, the thing that's noodling in my mind and nagging at me, those are all you-centered, writer-centered. Mm-hmm. And then there's what's going to work in the marketplace. What's out there working? What are the airport books? What's working right now? What's long having longevity? And those questions. And then what you just said, will the readers come with me on more witchy things? We don't know yet. You don't know yet. So, but that balance between, you know, your strategicness is showing, because it's that balance between, you've got to have both the thing I want to write and the thing that's going to work. And you can't control the thing that's going to work. You can try, but you don't have control. So it sounds like that's where you are with the witch card. You don't know.
I don't know. It's really important to me to do things that are gonna be significant. I don't want to write books people aren't gonna read. Mm-hmm. I just don't. And, mm-hmm. But on the other hand, I am not gonna write a book just to write a book. Like let's just tackle the idea that I told you I had sitting around for 3 days
didn't
follow up on.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was going to be a rom-com that had a game at its heart, and I won't get. I might come back to it, but basically, I poked at that, and I was like, "Well, it could center around poker," and I didn't really want to do that much poker. I envisioned myself like having to write about poker game. I don't know. I like to play poker, but not that much. Okay, it could be about backgammon. I do like playing backgammon. There are reasons that there was a list of games that would only apply here. And I didn't want to do chess because chess is the queen's gambit and that's been done. And I don't know, I just didn't want to spend a year messing with backgammon. Maybe I will, but I just didn't. And nothing that I could come up, I like to play games a little, but not enough to do that, basically. So I'm not going to spend, you know, it's going to take me a year and a half.
Right.
To write whatever this is. I need to want to be with these people and in this place for that long. And if it were really in me, like if I had some witch card sequel that I just desperately wanted to do, I wouldn't put that aside just because I was afraid people wouldn't buy it. Mm-hmm. But I kind of didn't let it's probably true that I just didn't let myself go there because I don't want to go there yet. So I really put that to the side of
so
of doing this.
What I love about what you're revealing is that there are a lot of books that you might enjoy writing. There's a lot of books that you could love. That's what you're really picking from. And I think this idea is really important because I often see writers get very precious about their idea. This is my idea. And the way it manifests itself as a book coach is people think you're going to steal their idea, which yeah. is hilarious because of what we're talking about. Like, what?
And we could, you know, go write a book about backgammon. It's not going to be the book I was going to write, even though right. I didn't tell you. And the only reason I didn't expand on it is because I don't want to spend the time on it. You know, I could write a book about two writers in adjoining houses trying to write each other's books, and that wouldn't be great because that's beach read. And I wouldn't, but I could, and it wouldn't be anything. Like, if she and I had both set out down that path at the same moment, they would be totally different books. Like, yeah. There's no, I mean, you know, I am going to talk about some ideas here, and I mean, fine, write your own version of that. It's not going to come out the same. Like, it's just not.
I just have to do a short digression on this point. I just finished reading, I think you read this book. I think I saw it. The Bright Hour by Nina Riggs. Did you read Mm-mm. that one? It's a it's a memoir. It's a devastatingly sad book. She's chronicling her own death, and she dies of cancer, and she has two young children.
Yeah, I won't be reading that.
You won't be reading it. But no. What fascinated me about it is it's exactly the same story and book and situation and setup as When Breath Becomes Air by Paul Kalanithi, which was hugely popular. And while I was reading Nina Riggs' book, I was thinking, it just was so present in my mind. Did she read his book? Did she know about his book? How did she think she could write this book? You know, it's the same story. And then there was a moment in the book in which she mentions his mm-hmm. book. And of course she's read his book. She's read all the books, right?
Right.
And I just loved so much that was her impulse to write her story, the same story. And she knew the other existed, but she's still doing it. And guess what? Lo and behold, a totally different story with totally different everything.
Of course it is.
I read both. I love both. I, unlike you, I will read all of those books. And so
I will read none of those
right,
books.
Right. So bring on the other one like that. And so it's that fine line between, is there room in the world for another book like that? Of course there is.
And that's, yeah, that there's always, and what frees me up in this space, whenever I get caught up in, well, but can I do that? So-and-so already did it, is the book Tokyo Ever After.
I didn't read that.
It's a YA book. It was a Reese's pick. It's really great. I enjoyed it enormously. It is The Princess Diaries set in Tokyo.
Amazing.
Absolutely. 100% the whole thing. Like, that's what it is. And it did great. People loved it. Meg Cabot did not go after the author with a shiv. It's fine.
Right.
There's room for more than one
right.
girl suddenly discovers she's the daughter of a prince and has to go join the royal court.
Right.
I will read all of those books, similar to you wanting to read all of the dying
all the people. Die. I yeah. love all the grief
We're
books.
We're so much alike, except in that book, except in that way. And, well, I'm just reading The Startup Wife. And I'm only partway through it. I don't know how I'm going to feel about it, but it's got so much of the same sort of ring and tone as Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow, which actually I think The Startup Wife came out first.
Mm.
They were probably written a vaguely the same time. And they're not the same story, but they've got a lot of the same stuff going on. But the thing is, if you liked one, you probably like the other. That's how people who read are.
Right. Right. So
that's
you're
the
looking...
the great thing about being an author, right? Nobody right. is like, oh... No, actually, I already read one romance. I don't need to read another one.
Right. So you're looking for that place where what you love intersects with what's strategically smart for you to do in your career mm-hmm. and what the marketplace might respond to. So tell us your ideas. Let's hear them.
Okay. All right. So I got four things here. And broadly speaking, I have one. I said no, I wasn't going to. One is witchy. It's just not that kind of, it's not set in the same world. It has a different kind of witchcraft. It's more, This one, you know what? Two of these ideas are from me playing the game, and two of them are just things that have been stuck in my head for a while. And this is one that's been stuck in my head for a while. So basically, it's a magic thing happens with a book and a library. It's very, it's giving serious Deborah Harkness. And it's, yeah, so this would be like big fantasy. It would be a little less, it would be bigger than playing the witch card.
So you mean like high fantasy, like we're immersed in the world?
It still takes place in the in our world, but there'd be more magic, more people, more locations. It wouldn't have that small town vibe. It would be more more moving around in time. It would probably have two points of view. So think the it's a little vial on the cover. Sarah Penner, apothecary. Think the apothecary.
I love that moment.
So think that kind of thing where it goes back and forth in time, but it would still have the family relationships that people like about me. It would still have, but it would be, I guess with all of these, I'm trying to do something different that is still the same, that still has what people, so people who've read me will come along and like it, but it'll have, I would like to level up a little bit, right?
That sounds like I was going to say a more ambitious structure.
It would be a little more ambitious structurally, and a little more ambitious in terms of, so this is probably, so that's one of them.
It sounds great. Sounds great.
Right. And then we go to, now I have two different commercial fiction that might or might not cross gender reader barriers. Dun, dun, dun. The first, think more J. Ryan Straddle. Think The Storied Life of A.J. Fickrey. Multi-POV, small town. It reminds me of another book that hasn't come out yet. It reminds me a little, it would have a little bit of,
Is it bookish? Bookish? The Storied Life of A.J. Fickrey is bookish.
No, but the thing it would have in common with that is multiple points of view in the same town around some of the same action. The Storied Life of A.J. Fickrey is not a great comp. J. Ryan Straddle is a good comp. I had a couple of others, but I've forgotten what they are. But think small town again, but more multiple points of view around things that are happening and multiple, and a little bit of, not a mystery, but like it's a mystery to the town. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit of a mystery to the reader. So this one, I can tell you a little bit more about this one because I can't imagine anyone, it's just a little bonkers and telling it kind of, so it's a very hockey focused small town, and all of a sudden, for reasons that are in fact connected to hockey, in the end, Jesus statues start disappearing. And that sounds like, oh my God, I can totally hear my agent or my editor saying, Carrot, you know, we're not touching Jesus. No, no Jesus. But it's funny. And they're not disappearing for reasons of like they're not disappearing for religious reasons, and they're actually they all disappear for different unrelated reasons, but because of a thing that's happening in the hockey rink in which people are trying to stop playing a particular artist's work during games, people think it's all related, and everyone gets kind of all caught up in this small town listserv mystery of, like, you know, you don't want me to be like this, and you know, like, so it would have the vibe of political differences without ever having, I'm not writing about people with real, we're not touching actual presidential elections ever. I just don't want to. Like, I don't even want to go there. But this would have that, like, everyone would assume that people were doing things for political-esque reasons. when right. really no one is. Like Got no it. One, no one here is acting, and everyone would sort of need to come around and understand. This would be a whole town full of people who need to start thinking the best of each other instead of the worst. So I really like that one. And that one's got...
Do you have working titles attached to these?
That one's working title is The Best Offense.
The Best
Offense. I do. Okay. The other one's working title... Let me see. What was the... what's the library book's working title? I do have working titles. The working titles are the easiest thing to share because they will undoubtedly change. All right.
I was thinking of it as the big witch story when you were telling it to me, but just so we can talk about these. So we got The Best Offense, and we
Okay, the first one, that one's called A Spell for Enough, the first one.
Okay, A Spell for Enough.
Right, and then the second one is The Best Offense.
Okay, and then are those the two?
And like I've written, what I've done is I've written, like I have a little back of the book blurb mm-hmm. for these. And some stuff, and a little bit of synopsis, and...
And are these the two from the airport game, or no?
No, both of those are the non-airport game ones.
Okay, so then the next two are the airport
game. The next two are the airport game ones. So the next one is called The Ethicists.
Nice.
The comp here is tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow in a big way. So the workplace I chose is a big city newspaper. I might be a little familiar with that. and I have two people in different parts of it coming together to write an ethics column that is in various ways, basically big things happen around, they blow up somebody's life with their ethics column, and that's all in the past, but now they have to come back together, and one of them gets fired and the other one sticks around, but it doesn't go well, and she's kind of, the one who sticks around is kind of aging out of the paper and getting pushed out. And the other one has had actually a much more successful career, even though they got pushed out. And they are, it is a man and a woman, but there's no, I guess tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow, right? There's no romance between them. They're both happily married in other ways. They're work spouses.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And now the paper wants to bring the column back, but they own the name for excellent reasons.
Fascinating.
And she wants them to do something with it again. And he, for lots of personal reasons that have to do with the person whose life they destroyed by accident, doesn't. And so there's that one. I really like that one.
Wow, these are really different.
I know, that's the thing. They're all great. And they're really different. So that, I don't know, that might be the front runner. And then the last one is a rom-com. It has a great catchy name that I'm actually not going to throw out there.
Okay.
Because...
So we're going to call it the rom-com.
We're going to call it the rom-com. And it has a hook that I'm not going to get into.
That's fine. Okay,
so... It actually is a legit idea that I wouldn't want to go anywhere else.
Okay, so it's a rom-com.
It's a hooky rom-com that takes place on Cape Cod during a wedding. Big family, small family, rich family, not so rich family. Probably, when we were talking before and I was like, oh, the Boston people and the New York
yes,
people.
Yes, yes, yes.
I forgot about that. They would play into that. So this is that one is my combination. That's my Emily Henry
mm-hmm,
with
mm-hmm.
Probably inevitable touches of Ellen Hildebrand. So
this is so fascinating. Okay, so you have these four ideas. They're
Yeah, and call that one, you can call that Cape Cod rom-com.
Cape Cod rom-com. So, yeah. And I can tell I love, part of the reason I love doing this while we're on video, even if folks are listening on the podcast, is I can see you and your energy. And that's a thing that I do a lot is watch writers talk about their writing. And I can see that you love all these ideas. You love
yes.
them.
Well, and so I just did them in order.
Yeah.
So the one that I was least energetic about is also the first one.
Yeah.
Like, I am excited about that idea. I hadn't thought about it in 3 weeks because that's the first one that I did.
So. Yeah, but I can see that, and to me, that's something I'll sometimes get writers describing books, and they sound like they're describing the most doom and gloom thing, and it's they feel like they should or they have to, or this is the book mm-hmm. I could write, or it needs to be set in my profession, or da da da, whatever it is, and you can see their energy, and you've got really up energy for all these books. And
yeah, I could get excited about all of them. I think the fantasy is maybe my least excitement at the moment. And it's also probably the least likely direction, just because the safest thing to do, I'm just guessing. And my next job is to present these to my agent and talk them over with her. So the safest thing to do is to go back in the direction of the two successful books I've already had and save the witchy magical piece for later. And that's probably, and also I mean, it was hard to write a magic system. You haven't lived until you've sat down with my editor and probably any editor, and they have said, but why do they fly?
Right. They just do.
Or and you're like, well, I mean, they had this spell and they did. Okay, fine. So the spell did what? But I thought you wrote, I thought the spell was only for, like, until you've done, incidentally, no one flies in my book, but like, until you've gone through that for 2.5 hours of like,
because it's cool,
because it's magic, you know, and it's like, okay, fine, it's magic, but the magic has to be logical and consistent, and there have to be rules, and if there aren't rules that you don't break, then you didn't write a really magic story. And I don't know that I just don't know that I have that in me again.
So
for right now, so I'm almost, but I might. There's parts of that other thing I'm really excited about. So,
do you have the kind of relationship with your agent where she will say, "This one, let's go," or it will be a conversation?
It's going to be a conversation. I would guess she's going to be like, "Well, which one do you want to write?"
Right.
I'm probably, after saying what I just said about the more fantastical idea, and probably with some criticism of the Jesus idea for exactly that idea, which it might, in fact, why I want to do it. Yeah, I don't know. I'm pretty excited about all. I'm excited about all of these.
And so what happens if one emerges as a front runner? What happens in your mind with the other three? Do they go back into the bank or the vault and get locked up for 2 years, or do they, and then you see how they feel in 2 years, do you forget about them? Like, what happened?
I don't know. I haven't done this before. I'm willing to bet that one of the things that will happen is that 3 months into the next project, I'm like, no, that would have been so much better.
Yeah.
But we'll be resisting that.
Yeah.
So, you know, that'll be a firm. I will keep, you know, they're in the same notebook I'll be working in, because this is my working notebook. So I will probably have ideas about them and throw them onto the pages, you know, and keep them alive. So it wouldn't surprise me if one of them emerges as the front runner for what comes next. But it's also, I mean, what comes next is going to be a year and a half away. I might not be interested in any of them anymore.
Right.
Or
right.
I might have pulled elements out of them and like torn them up to use in the new book. That's possible. I don't know. I've never done this before. So that piece of it, I don't know. But I know that what comes next is a conversation with Karen, my agent, and then figuring out sort of what comes next in terms of my editorial life. I do not owe any, I owe contractually, I owe a first look. That's all. I don't have a two-book contract or anything like that.
So you're going to, in a matter of days, send these off to your agent. You'll have a discussion with her, and then it'll be interesting for your listeners to hear what comes next.
Yep.
We'll leave that cliffhanger right here.
That's what we'll do.
Thanks for joining us for this Summer Idea Factory episode. As always, you'll find all the relevant links in the show notes. And if you don't get those by email, you should, because every once in a while, we toss a bonus in there. Sign up at amwritingpodcast.com. And if I haven't already said so, let me send you out with the usual. This week, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game.
The hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perilla. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Hey, listeners, it's KJ here, asking for a favor. Have you reviewed hashtag AmWriting in your pod player yet? Would you? I know, you're driving or running or cooking or whatever you do while listening, and we are there for that. But if you love us and could take a minute to hit that 5-star button and toss in a comment, we'd appreciate it. Oh, and if you don't love us, carry on with what you're doing. In fact, we hear the review button isn't working right now. Don't check.